The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
We all, you know, kind of saw where we're at and heard where we were at as far as money and all that stuff. So for Tom and Theo to get this deal done, I mean, it's a huge, you know, shot in our arm for us. You know, it's only going to help us. You know, now we just, it's like getting a gift on Christmas morning and having to wait, you know, to open it for a week or so before he's here. So, you know, I think it'll kind of more set in when he actually shows up and is in uniform with us and pitching.
Middays on the Score.
John Lester celebrating their new acquisition. The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves, the Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves. I'd like to thank their loyal fans for making this 25th anniversary so special. Thank you, and see you in October. We have talked a lot of Cubs on the Bernstein and McKnight Show today. We're on the Score, by the way, 9 to noon,
yeah,
Monday through Friday.
That's
doing
what we do.
This, talking about all kinds of things. And we got the opportunity on Friday at Wrigley Field in the right field bleachers to sit down with Theo Epstein.
Yeah, and just a number of things we talked about. The acquisition of Craig Kimbrell. We had the press conference that morning, too. So it was just kind of this hectic thing with a whole bunch of news. In case you missed some of it or just wanted a better perspective of where things are, we thought we'd bring some of it to you. I just wanted to know, to start things out with Theo on Friday, whether or not there was contact from the Cubs with Craig Kimbrell's camp in the offseason.
We would have loved to bring in a, you know, bona fide closer in the offseason. We were a little bit different dynamic this winter. You know, Kimbrell wasn't attainable for us. You know, he had his own market and you know, wasn't in an area where we could negotiate with him at all this winter. And we had our own restraints, and we were fishing in different waters, I guess is the best way to put it, this winter. And we started the year knowing that there was a really good chance we were going to have to be aggressive in season, making some moves. You know, the deeper you get into the season, the less salary you're taking on in a deal. Obviously, there's always a number of relievers available in trade. We've made trades for the bullpen every year that we've been competitive, 15, 16, 17, and 18. And we certainly expected to be in that mindset again this year. We did not expect to, you know, be able to add arguably a Hall of Fame closer midseason without giving up any players. And that's what made this move so attractive. And once a couple things changed on our end and his market started to come into an area that was more realistic for us, it became just clear it was such a unique opportunity. And Tom Ricketts was in an aggressive mindset and was unbelievable to work with on this, trying to make it happen.
How important was David Ross in this process? I hadn't really considered it, and now after hearing the press conference, it mattered that the Cubs had him as an asset, did it not?
Yeah, you know, he's been so valuable as a special assistant, just his contacts in the game, and he's got a dynamic personality. He can relate to all different kinds of players and is so connected. And last Friday, Craig was going to throw a bullpen. It was going to be our first time being able to see him throw as we moved down the road in this process. And we sent one of our scouts from that area, Joe Nelson, who pitched in the big leagues a long time. And we thought, well, why not send David Ross too? And Rossi was great. He hopped on a flight and was able to make it. We figured it'd be good to get a look from a guy who caught Craig. And then also, you know, what better salesman for the Cubs than David Ross? As he told Craig, if the fans there love me, just imagine how they'll feel about you. Because he's look how they treat a backup catcher. I think you might have a pretty good time as a dominant closer. So it was really helpful.
So Theo, the timeline, as best as you can tell, to start for Craig will be optioned, then Arizona for a little while, then at some point rehab starts. I guess we call them rehab starts. I guess mm-hmm. for somebody. When does pitch lab happen for him?
Well, we'll see. Well, you know, that's located down in Arizona, so, you know, that may or may not happen, depending on his comfort level with it. But it's really just like throwing a bullpen,
yeah,
you know, but with a little bit extra equipment to establish the baseline for if things get out of whack down the line, or if there's a slight tweak you can make for optimization. But that's not a fundamental part of the plan at all. It's really just about getting him up to game speed. He's done a great job. You know, the report from Joe Nelson and Rossi was that he looked just about in midseason form. It was fastball was coming out really well. I think he touched 95 just in the bullpen session, and breaking ball was really good too. So he just hasn't faced hitters, game action. He's got to do PFP. He's got to, you know, get his sights set with hitters in the box. He's got to have guys taking real swings against him. And we can accomplish that in due time in Arizona. I think it's important not to rush it. You know, it might feel good to get him back here, you know, in a week and we all feel good about things, but then there might be a price to pay for that, you know, later in the year. So we're trying to give them a foundation that guys need and build up during spring training that that he can build off of all year.
Well, I'm curious about a phrase that you used regarding Carlos Gonzalez a couple of days ago, because it looks like, you know, a nice maybe lightning in a bottle kind of pickup that happens. It's a great story. And you talked about how prone he is to be hot. And when he gets hot, it's real hot. And you actually used the phrase epic tear.
I think I use that because we've been on the opposite side of that too many times. We've been the brunt of some of those tears over the years.
But how long do you give? Like how do you balance a couple things? Balance giving him a fair shot at an epic tear with also having an outfield full of useful guys.
Yeah, I just think it's a feel thing. I mean, we didn't bring him in to be an everyday outfielder, you know, not at all. That's not what the job is. Albert Almora is having a really good season. He's growing as a player. He needs to play. He deserves an opportunity. But there are a lot of at-bats to go around. And, you know, two different type hitters, for example, just those two guys. And it's more than just those two guys. But Albert obviously pounds lefties and also hits the high fastball really well. Carlos Gonzalez is one of the best low ball hitters around. That's the way his swing path is geared. So this is a way to pick the right matchups just based on swing path alone. But Joe's got really good feel. I think, you know, at this point in Carlos's career, you don't want him, you know, being worn down, playing every single day. At this point in Albert's career, you don't want him sitting on the bench, you know, too many days in a row. He needs to play. So this is a way to balance it out. And the one thing that we do have and continue to benefit from is depth. So, you know, when a guy gets banged up for a couple days, as we saw a couple weeks ago with Javi Baez, you have Addison Russell step in. An outfielder can't play for a couple days, you know, you've got a Carlos Gonzalez to step right in. And that doesn't get noticed all the time, but at the end of the year, if you've given all your at-bats to quality players, there's a pretty good chance you're going to be at or near the top of the standings.
We got asked just the other day about Craig Kimbrell's contract status and what it might mean for you guys going forward, not just this year, but in a few. And we were asked if he had to go to 3 years, and we just kind of figured, well, that's the price of poker. Like you said, Kimbrell's on a Hall of Fame trajectory. He kind of gets to demand that. Were you guys interested in being a little bit more, I don't know, flexible or fungible with that deal? Was that a point of conversation at all, or is this what you needed to be at to get Craig Kimbrell?
Yeah, it was a competitive marketplace.
Yeah.
I know for a fact that there were other teams at 3 years, and we didn't blow away the competition at all. I think financially, I think we might have got him by a nose, and then the appeal of Chicago and everything is what Craig wanting to be here made this happen. But no, that's the cost. You know, I think like if you could have told us in the off season that's the price for Craig Kimbrell, we would have said that's a really good price. It's good value for a guy like that. Now, whether we could have done it or not based on our situation, that's another story. But in the end, I think it's a good resolution for everybody. It's a fair deal for us and just the right piece that we need. And Craig gets to be in an attractive destination with a contract that he can be proud of, and he gets to go out and do his thing.
What's the range of likelihoods for the return of Brandon Morrow this season?
You know, I don't know, and that's one of the reasons why we were aggressive and made this deal. You know, he got ramped up and then had to felt some of that same achiness in his elbow and had to shut it down. Is just in the early stage of restarting it. So I think I'd love to say it's definitely going to happen, and because what a dynamic add that would be, you know, on top of Kimbrell with the other guys we have at the back end of the pen. But I don't know, and I hope for our sake and for his sake, he's worked so hard to get back that he can't come back, but we're in wait-and-see mode as he ramps up.
Looking at this year's draft and looking at the way baseball is changing, you know, when we were down in Arizona, we had a long conversation with Jed about the cameras, about the pitch lab, about what's happening in baseball, and obviously it's being studied now. The new book that just come out, The MVP Machine, talks about some of this stuff in really fascinating ways. And as you look at drafting, especially pitching right now, I believe you mentioned something about anticipating rules changes. I'm not sure, is that the minimum three batter rule? With all of this happening, how is it coming together in as you set your draft board and as you look going forward at how you're going to develop and now engineer pitching?
Yeah, you know, the potential rule changes, nobody knows how it's going to evolve, right? If all of a sudden they limit the amount of pitchers on a 25-man roster to, say, 10, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden the premium is on starting pitchers who can go deep into games. and multi-inning relievers, and guys who can just blow and go for one inning at a time aren't nearly as valuable. You know, power starting pitchers who run up pitch counts but are out after five innings, not as valuable. You're looking for guys who can get through an order three times, get deep in games. But no one knows if it's going to go that direction or if it's going to go the other direction, and there's not going to be any type of legislative adjustments. And instead, this trend of more pitchers, more power, more specialization is going to continue. So I think you just have to be flexible in player development and with what we look for in the draft. And I think you can't go wrong trying to, in player development, focusing on developing a complete pitcher. You know, somebody who's got already a two-pitch arsenal might be quick to the big leagues that way. Slow them down and make sure they can develop that third pitch, refine their command, make sure they can get out the opposite-sided hitter. You can always specialize later on, but early in the process, it's really important to develop that that broad base of skills. And yeah, I think with Adbert Azoulay is a good example of somebody who's had a slower path. He's had his ups and downs in his development time. He's had his injuries as well, and he's at a point now where he's healthy. You see the benefits of the development. He's a much more complete pitcher now than he was a couple years ago, and he's somebody that could probably, if we needed to, fill down the road a number of different roles on a pitch.
How far down the road?
But down the road. I mean, okay. I think he's pitching his way into being depth for us right now, mm-hmm. and you know, certainly as we look at next year's team, I think we anticipate him with, if he continues to pitch at this level, being a big part of it, and he's all important depth for us this year. With the new rules, with the trading deadline, you can't really go out and make trades after July 31st. So there's an even greater premium on the depth that you have at AAA, and he'll be a big part of that, if not more.
I would be remiss if I didn't follow up on this. I believe in the press conference you were asked a question about today Wrigley Field being used as part of a fundraiser for Donald Trump's 2020 campaign, and you demurred and said that you were there to talk about Craig Kimbrell. What are your thoughts on that? Do you have any strong feelings one way or the other about how Wrigley Field can be used for political purposes?
I mean, it's a venue, right? It's a private venue, and people have the right to host events here, especially the owners, and they're going to. And I've hosted events here too, and on the other side of the political spectrum. So you know, it's a free society, a private venue, and I don't think anyone intends any disrespect. This is a venue that is attractive to a lot of groups, and as long as it's sort of equal opportunity on all sides, I don't think there's a tremendous argument against it. And, leaving my political leanings out of it, I'll just say, I know for a fact that this venue has hosted groups from both sides of the political spectrum and probably will continue to do so going forward. This one's getting publicity, but it's really not something I give a lot of thought to. As long as I know, it's balanced on both sides, that's all you can ask for.
Theo Epstein on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on Friday. As you could hear the stylings of Gary Pressey in the background, it was some very interesting stuff from the Cubs president of baseball operations. This segment brought to you by Campland RV. Head on over to Campland RV for their 58th anniversary sale. Now through the end of June, find great deals on RVs and campers. Campland RV, RV buying made easy. Just a short drive off I-94 in Northwest Indiana. We still have a pair of tickets to see Dead and Company at Wrigley Field on June 14th. We're going to be giving these away very shortly. And if you are a fan of Bob Weir and is it Bill Kreutzmann?
That's on you, man.
Is John Mayer in that band?
I think that's the one thing I do know about it. John Mayer, for all the crap he gets, hell of a guitar player.
I know, he's a really good guitar player.
Real good guitar player.
Steve Kerr meeting with the media after shoot-around before tonight's game 5 between the Warriors and the Raptors says Kevin Durant participated in a full shoot-around and will be a game-time decision. It was reported that he had left.
He did.
Probably going in to get some treatment, I would think.
You would imagine.
But full participant in shoot-around, game-time decision. We need to take a quick timeout.
We do.
When we come back, there's a couple questions. You were going to try to lobby me on something.
I am. I'm lobbying us because you're folding like cheap card tables. So I'm going to get you on something here, something that you've stood against for years. I think I've finally found the way to bring you over to the light side of the force.
I made the mistake of showing my crack.
You did. You showed your crack, and I'm going to exploit it. That's what I do.
I have a question about Craig Kimbrell. an important, important question about Craig Kimbrell and about where he now ranks in a certain category of Chicago sports.
We will ask that question of you when we come back. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Here's Kimbrell's work earlier today. First time you get to see him in, well, the Cubs t-shirt, Cubs pants, working on the side and popping the mitt.
It was Fox Baseball that gave us the explosive mitt pops of a bullpenning Craig Kimbrell.
Very loud.
And you notice I pause before I say Craig Kimbrell.
You must have to.
And I am learning this now that the Cubs have acquired Craig Kimbrell. You've got to really be careful because it is a very difficult name to pronounce correctly because of where these stoppages and plosives where these are placed here. Craig Kimbrell. I have heard, I don't know about you, I have heard Keg Krimble.
Sure.
Krimble sounds like a dating app.
Krimble?
Yeah, I met her on my Krimble profile.
Swipe right on Krimble.
I met her on Krimble. I don't know what it would be for. I don't know which niche it would be. It would serve.
Guys looking for women with good breaking balls. Right. I don't know.
Who would do the dating app Krimble? So I've heard Keg Krimble. I've heard Craig Krimble.
Mm-hmm.
Every variation of it, because I guess it's right there with Mike Holmgren. Mike Holmgren's name was way too difficult for some people to pronounce, especially people from Western Pennsylvania.
Mike Holmgren.
Right, it was always Holmgren.
Holmgren, Wanstead, that's right.
Wanstead and Doug Buffon both routinely referred to him as Holmgren, even though it's Holmgren. And this is on that list of some of these, and we could put the short list together, but of names you have to say a lot as part of one's job.
Mm-hmm.
Craig Kimbrell is already rising to the top of the list.
You realize that I am likely to invent several new pronunciations of Craig Kimbrell along the way here. Like his first, you put me on the top of the list for guys that are going to absolutely screw that thing up.
Well,
what
you
I do.
Screw up mundane words. You can't even say raccoon.
No, it's raccoon. It's a different type of animal altogether. You know what I caught, too, before we move on to the Bears thing that I need to sell you on, that I'm going to sell you on? We heard from Theo just on Friday. We played a little bit of it back for you just earlier in the show. Do you notice that you don't hear Theo Epstein say the words, "I don't know," all that often when it comes to talking about his baseball team and the expectations and the timelines and whatnot? You asked him what the range of likely outcomes are for Brandon Morrow at this point.
Yeah, I didn't even say when is he coming back.
No, what are the range of likely outcomes? You gave him the broadened.
It.
Yeah, you really did. You gave him the whiteboard to draw.
I could have understood if I said when is he coming back. I don't know. We don't know.
I don't know.
But what are all of the where do we even begin trying to figure out where the possibilities are? And he didn't even know.
Yeah, he said I don't know, and that it kind of sucks because really I understand that you should not probably as a Cub fan. You should not put yourself in a situation where you're expecting the return of Brandon Morrow. Like it's probably not a safe space to be in. You'd like to create in your head a circle of trust that doesn't have to involve him. But Theo's right. If you have that guy capable of throwing 2-3 times a week or 2-3 times in a 7-game series or hell, twice in a 5-game series, if he's feeling really spry, that bullpen does look a lot different. And that doesn't mean that you count on him. And it doesn't mean that you don't go out and find, I don't know, shutdown lefty number one or even number two in that bullpen. But it is, not that Morrow's left-handed, but it is fairly interesting to think about what that bullpen could be with the next likely addition, plus maybe, possibly, some kind of production from Brandon Morrow. But with Theo saying, I don't know, I pretty much ruled it out.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves would like to thank their loyal fans for making this 25th anniversary so special. Thank you, and see you in October. Bernstein and McKnight on Sports Radio 670 The Score. I know where you're going with this football thought.
Yeah, you ought to, because I haven't tried to score any points for subtlety here. The biggest moment for me of the Bears 100 thing. Again, I turned 34 in a month, so that's where I'm at in terms of my own Bears fandom. The 06 thing was, that's where I am at. Watching the introduction of all those players, and like we talked with Rich Campbell about at 10 o'clock earlier in the show, there's six Gold Jackets, there's six Hall of Famers up there as Devin Hester gets announced at the Bears 100 celebration. Crank That Soldier Boy gets played. He comes out. He's dancing. He's doing his whole thing. And it just kind of, I would call it meatballism, but it was more than that because of what the weekend was. You know, I think I could probably find some similar emotions for any franchise that was holding a celebration like this, though obviously none are quite as tied to me as the Bears because they're that team. They're my team, the one I grew up rooting for. But Devin Hester, like I now need, especially after this, I now need Devin Hester to go into the Hall of Fame. I know that J.J. Stankiewicz wrote this up really well for NBC Sports Chicago. He was at the weekend and covering it. But, you know, he would be the fourth special teamer to get in. Morton Anderson, Jan Stenerud, Ray Guy. He has more punt return touchdowns than anyone in NFL history.
I know the resume.
He has 20 total non-offensive touchdowns, most in NFL history. He's one of two players with five or more kick return and punt return touchdowns. He has the highest average yards per punt return among players with at least 300 returns. Three first-team all-pro seasons, four Pro Bowl appearances. He did stuff for the offense, even though he was terrible on offense. You understand what I'm saying? The hidden yards, the invisible stuff, teams kicking away from him and spiraling the football out of bounds so that awful, awful Bears offense could somehow get closer to the end zone, and then, you know, you could kick a bunch of field goals and win that way because the defense was so damn good. I think there's maybe the loudest argument I can make is he was the best there was at what he did. And what
so
he did,
Pat Manley.
Yeah, but what he did is going away. And Pat Manley didn't score points. I'm sorry, I love the guy, and he's number 100 in my heart always. But he didn't score points.
But he created the hidden yards by allowing the punter to have the ball rotated perfectly into his hands.
There are degrees of separation between how Manley affected games and how Devin Hester did. Devin Hester put fear into people. Pat never did. He just couldn't.
You don't know that. You'd have to ask his opponents. Maybe none of them slept.
I think
because they knew that the opposing long snapper.
That spiral was
Patrick
perfect,
Manley.
And that RPMs were perfect.
They couldn't
was
get the image out of their head.
42 miles an hour. The entire way.
They knew the incremental higher likelihood of made kicks.
You're softening on this. I can feel it.
I lived the Devin Hester experience of them. You didn't watch him play football. He couldn't play. They tried him as a defensive back.
Sure.
And he couldn't remember who to cover. They tried him as a wide receiver, and he couldn't remember.
He's not
where
going
to line
in
up.
As a wide receiver, and he's not going in as a cornerback. He's going in as a returner.
I know
the best to ever do it.
I agree that he is the best. He's the best return man ever. There's
yes.
There's no debating that. I just don't know that that's enough to get you in the Hall of Fame.
I think it will be.
That's
I think
different
you,
though.
Right. Well,
saying you think it will be isn't the same as
okay. So let me press the clutch and change the gear. Like it will be a different conversation when he's eligible. It will be after he's been on the ballot a couple of times because I don't think he'll go in right away. But that's part of this conversation as well. He's going to get in. He's going to get his gold jacket at some point. Whether you need to have it weathered away some from you, whether you need the sands of time to soften the edges or whatever. This guy is going to go into the Hall of Fame, and I need it now. I don't know what happened to me over the weekend.
Yeah, seriously.
It's weird. Like now it's like this emotional tether that I didn't know I had attached to this team and that player.
A perfect climax to the story.
Because to the Hester story to that team's story?
No, the Hester story. Because remember, at every level of football, coaches struggled to figure out where to put him.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
In high school, they said, look, we want to get the ball in his hands somehow.
Miami had no clue with it.
Because they had the same issues.
Yeah.
They had the same issues with his effectiveness at other positions when something other than run that way as fast as you can and run away from people is all he had to do. That eventually, you know, they paid him like a wide receiver. They made it difficult for others or would have made it difficult for others had they given him the money that they wanted to pay him as a return man because it screws everything else up.
I don't know that affects the story, but that's not on him.
I'm not.
You know what I mean? That mistake's not on him.
No, I'm not mad at him. I would say it would be an amazing finish to this whole thing.
Why are you mad at Hester?
Stop hating Hester. That at Miami, they didn't know what to do.
No.
And it's why he went in the draft where he did. We talked to Greg Gabriel about it. It was the guy that drafted him.
Yeah.
When they said, we don't know, but we know that he's got rare athletic traits and a rare ability in the open field to make people miss. And it's pretty special stuff. But the fact that he was allowed and able and empowered to have the run that he did is wonderful. I just it's a big leap to go from that to saying Hall of Fame?
I don't think it's that big of a leap. I think when rules change because of your ability, I think that ought to open some eyes. And it has yours. I'm not saying that you're blind to this whole thing. I far from it. I just think that this particular player does more than just signify the time and place that he played. You know, it's that guy exemplified an aspect of this game that could go away next season, as soon as next season. It probably won't, but you understand the kickoff is this close,
yes,
to going away. Doesn't it feel that way every time you start the season and every time you get into camp and every time the first ball gets kicked into the air, you go, I made it one more year with the kickoff, some kind of kickoff.
We now
still
have the opening touchback.
That's what it is. That's what it is.
The ball is in the air, and the whistle is blown.
Yep, and now we go to commercial. Like, yep. 9 seconds into the damn football game, you go to the next commercial, and you're like, all right, I'll wait it out. We'll see what happens. But it's weird, and I didn't expect it. And I think you found some unexpected emotion out of this Bears 100 thing. I certainly did, and the last thing I expected was for that emotion to get tethered to Devin Hester.
Yeah, that's funny.
But it did. It absolutely did.
Rudy sends a note. He says, I also am softening on Hester for the Hall of Fame as well, but I don't care about the Hall of Fame. But still,
that's
no.
Fair.
He
that's
said, no, it kills me that people hate Jay Cutler when he had to stop and tell Devin Hester where to line up. I can't put someone in the Hall of Fame who was so bad at actual football.
I promise you that there's a Hall of Fame in there, a Hall of Famer in there already that had to be told where to line up. I promise you that guy's already in. And it's probably guys plural.
Let's grab a call. South Shore, it's Bill on Sports Radio 670 The Score. What's happening, Bill?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Just a little talking about the thinking about the finals, you know. I was just going to say, you know, if Toronto does close it out, whether it's tonight or game 6 or 7, you know, just about Golden State. I mean, I understand myself and other people like to sometimes root against them. They broke the 72 wins. But what I don't like is so many times I hear, you know, they're just a team that chucks up threes, or, you know, they're a team that went and got KD and, you know, everyone loves to hate them. At the end of the day, to me, that team did so much with ball movement, through the draft, and, you know, I hate to say it, but I have a lot of respect for what they've done with the offensive side of the game and the way they built the team. And I understand people rooting against them, but, you know, I think there's a lot of them to look at and think that they did great. And
obviously, you know, they're an all-time great team. Remembered as a dynastic, great, great team. I don't hear what you're hearing. I don't hear people mad at them for shooting threes and be mad at everybody in the NBA.
I think there's some of that going around. I do, but I think mostly people are awed by greatness, and the Warriors have certainly been that. I'll tell you this much. I don't know if you caught the news, if you were listening earlier in the show, but Dan had read it out. Apparently, Kevin Durant is a game-time decision for the Warriors. They're facing elimination. Doesn't it kind of feel to you that if he's going to be a game-time decision, if they're going to term it that way, he almost has to play? I mean, can you
like a Willis Reed thing where he comes out for the first couple? Or
whatever it is. I mean, he has to be on the floor. Can you imagine this Warriors franchise in the state it's in with Kevin Durant? Apparently, Wojnarowski is now tweeting about not just the Anthony Davis stuff with apparently the Pelicans putting together a real framework for what it's going to take to get him, but now this kind of sense that the Brooklyn Nets could be the squad that get Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Can you imagine the show that it would be to have Kevin Durant, a game-time decision, not play, lose the finals, then leave? That's... That'd be horrendous.
Well, either
you'd have to
wait.
Sure, but now terming him game time decision means something. I mean, it feels a little different than you're out.
Doesn't it feel like Cutler in the NFC title game?
There will be some of that if he doesn't play.
There absolutely will.
There's no question.
And part of it is, and you would at least assume, I know it's different type of injury, so it leaves a little more wiggle room, but it feels like team-based vagueness too.
Yeah, because
like
of the way
on him?
Because of the way they've termed it.
Maybe they figure, look, he's leaving anyway. We don't need to maintain a relationship with him. We might as well pressure him to play right
it's
now.
It's a false flag. It's an inside job. It's a send up. I love it.
When we come back, we got a pair of tickets to see Dead and Company at Wrigley Field on June 14th. A big show. You may be able to go with a friend if you are the lucky listener. When we come back on Bernstein and McKnight on The Score. Get the thank yous out of the way. Rich Campbell joined us today. Jay Zawoski, Rick Camp, Ray Diaz, Brian Gertz, Joe Strowski had the updates. Tomorrow, Joe Sheehan is going to join us. We hope to have a surprise basketball guest as well, which should be fun. And a huge thank you to the Scores engineering department.
Man, they got it together today.
Yeah, if you realize what happened, if you're just joining us, things sound a little bit different. They will for a little while. They're completely redoing the Score on-air studios.
Soup to nuts.
Absolutely. They're tearing everything out down to the studs and building an all-new studio.
I said soup to nuts.
Yar.
You're welcome.
Yar. I'll get that one, too. So after we did transition with Mully and Hanley, we walked down the hall. We rolled our chairs down the hall into the Entercom Culinary Kitchen where we are setting up shop until the new studios are ready. But and you think, okay, big deal. For what the engineers did, for what they had to do, what they had to account for to make this a workable studio production is really incredible.
Herculean stuff. Hats off. Well
really
done,
special.
Guys.
This segment's brought to you by Lakeside Bank. Good treasury management is good business, but there's a secret. At many banks, it's cookie cutter and costly. At Lakeside Bank, they custom design programs for each client and save the money. Call Lakeside Bank. Learn the secret to real treasury management. Lakeside Bank, it's about time. From you, I need a single-digit number.
7.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Caller 7 to the contest line, 312-591-6700, will win a pair of tickets to see Dead and Company at Wrigley Field on June 14th. It's going to be Lawrence Holmes's maiden voyage in this studio, so...
Should we do leftovers from behind Lawrence's show as he does it, or do you think that's going to be too distracting?
You're the executive director of leftovers. Right,
we'll
so
find
I,
something
I
fun to do.
I leave that heavy lifting to you, right. But we already have some stuff in the can that I think is going to be
That's true. Yeah, maybe it'll be a journey, a chronicle of our journey here into the culinary kitchen to do our show for the day.
We'll say hello to Lawrence coming up next. You got the score.